You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Thursday. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this show, Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And today, no Adam, and today's kind of a surprise episode. I didn't really think we were going to publish them today. But so Locked On Fantasy Basketball host Josh Lloyd and I recently talked about the Pacers, and he tackled the team from a fantasy perspective, and I got to share insight about the team. And it was for the Locked On Fantasy Basketball show, but it was still a fun conversation about the Pacers, and I figure a lot of you guys are A, fantasy basketball people, and B, like the Pacers, so why not share it with you guys? So this whole episode is a conversation with me and Josh Lloyd talking about the Pacers from a fantasy basketball perspective. So check it out. It's a fun one, and we'll see you guys next Monday.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at @RedRock_Beeble. Today, another team preview podcast. We are looking at the Indiana Pacers. So, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it, indeed. To talk about the Indiana Pacers, I am joined by the host of the Locked, one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast, Tony East, is here with me. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Josh. We're really looking forward to it.
All right, so let's talk Indiana Pacers now. This team that's undergone quite a bit of change from last season, a few different pieces. But I start these podcasts off, Tony, by talking about injured players and where we're at with those guys. And there's no bigger injury situation to talk about than Victor Oladipo, who tore that quad muscle, had knee injuries at the start of last season, and then tore his quad muscle. First of all, where are we in terms of an expected return date for Oladipo?
Yeah, all we've gotten so far is Woj on his draft special saying that the Pacers expect him back in December or January. And then team president of basketball operations, Kevin Pritchard, confirming, or rather also stating on the radio, that the timeline is December, January is what the team is thinking. However, you know, during summer league broadcasts, front office executive people were interviewed and said that there's no reason to rush him back, and kind of confirmed that December timeline. So it's looking like he'll miss the first couple months of the season.
Yeah, so that makes it pretty tough in terms of fantasy value, in terms of drafting Oladipo. Look, last season he had a downturn in his production regardless of the injury. There was the knee problem, which I think had an impact. But I stressed it often at the start of last season that he had this really elevated steal rate and elevated block rate, which jumped him right up into second round consideration. And it didn't seem like that would be something that would necessarily continue. It fell off quite a bit. And now when he's got an ADP of 55 on Yahoo and 47 on ESPN, which is about the same spot where he finished last season on a per game basis, I just don't see how we can really, you know, consider him a draftable guy there if he's going to miss those first 2 to 3 months of the season. And then you'd have to think there's going to be some pretty significant restrictions when he does return.
Yeah, I think so too. No one's really said load management, but it's kind of been hinted at when he returns, and they have, you know, seven back-to-backs after December 15th, just an arbitrary date in his return time frame. But you know, even if he comes back at the end of the month, you know, he's going to miss all those second games of back-to-backs and maybe some games on road trips. And sure, they now have Jeremy Lamb and Justin Holiday too, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But, I mean, they have more guys who could eat into his minutes. So, yeah, it's totally reasonable to expect that not only when he returns will he miss time before that, but obviously when he comes back, he could have a reduced role from prior seasons as they ease him back in.
Yeah, I just don't see, like, he only played 32 minutes a night last season. I just don't see the need for him to be at that sort of a level for this coming year, just given the injury, given the recovery from it, and the fact that he's going to miss that stage of the season. So I find it really hard to draft Oladipo anywhere near where he's being drafted at that spot. Later on, sure, and you might have a fully healthy Oladipo when it comes to the fantasy playoffs. But remember, if you're taking him at the 50 spot or the 40 spot, which is where sort of he's going in these drafts, 55, that sort of area, if you take him there and you don't have anyone active for 3 months, and the next month after that, he's going at half pace and missing games and playing those minutes, that means you've sacrificed grabbing another top 50 guy. So even if he is healthy by the time you get to the playoffs, you may not be there to even reap the benefits of it. So it's not like you're getting a top 10 or top 20 guy back, I don't think, at that point in the season. So it is pretty risky to draft a guy who's going to miss that big chunk of the season to begin with, which is not good for the Indiana Pacers. But you mentioned a couple of names there. Let's transition into those guys, because it looks to me as though Jeremy Lamb is going to be the player who does jump in and take that starting role while Oladipo is out. Is that how you see it?
Absolutely, yep.
So Lamb had a pretty strong season for Charlotte last season. He did move to the bench at the end of the year and actually tended to play better coming off the bench, but that's not really all that important in terms of looking at his value for this season. I think that he's going to push up to the high 20s in minutes. He's going to provide a nice scoring punch on this team as well. He looks after the ball. I think we might see actually an increase in some of his playmaking as well. I think he is relatively solid, Jeremy Lamb, in terms of draft spot around that 95 on Yahoo sounds about the right spot to me in that those back end rounds. When Oladipo returns, can you still see him keeping up in those high 20s of minutes?
Maybe not high 20s. I did a piece actually about the Oladipo-less rotation. I had him at 28 minutes with Oladipo. I think he could retain all of those minutes upon Oladipo returning, as if someone like Justin Holiday or Doug McDermott just gets completely cut from the rotation when Oladipo returns. And I don't think that will happen. So I think he might end up, as your typical sixth or seventh man in minutes at like 24 or 22 when Oladipo comes back. But once he's back, I don't think high 20s seems possible, given how many kind of wing guard hybrids that they have now.
Well, I think he's significantly better than Justin Holiday, who struggled significantly.
Absolutely right about that.
Yeah, he struggled massively in Memphis. Let's talk actually a little bit about Justin Holiday, because his stint as a member of the Memphis Grizzlies, I think it's fair to say it did not go well. He couldn't really hit shots. His defensive numbers fell off. Now, he put up some good numbers as a member of the Chicago Bulls, but it required him to be playing a ton of minutes and having the green light to shoot whenever he wanted to. At the beginning of the season, what do you think Holiday's role is going to be on this team?
I actually think at the beginning of the year, he might play a bit more than the common knowledge right now, just because he's probably the best wing defender this team has outside of Brogdon, who's going to be playing point guard. So I think he might get a solid chunk of minutes as like the backup two, and maybe even some minutes at the three if they need McDermott to play power forward. So I think he could play like 15 to 20 minutes a game with Oladipo out as the backup two guard, which who knows how effective he'll be on this team. But because he's one of the better defenders and definitely the oldest guy they have, he's 30, their next oldest guy is 27. Some of his veteran leadership might mean he gets a hair more minutes than people are expecting from him.
Yeah, I think that he's probably going to play in that 20-minute zone when Oladipo's out at the beginning of the season. But as I said, don't have too much in terms of high hopes for him. He was 115th ranked player last year, but it came in 32 minutes, and it was really on the back of him hitting a lot of threes and getting a lot of steals. He didn't shoot very well at all when he joined Memphis after coming across from Chicago, and I just don't see those minutes being there for Justin Holiday. We've talked about the arrival of wing players. Now, TJ Warren missed the end of last season with a phantom ankle injury. He was also given to the Pacers not for nothing. He was given to the Pacers along with an asset as a salary dump. He is likely just to slot in as the starting small forward on this team, correct?
Yep.
So he was the starting power forward for the Suns for a big chunk of last season. And what we saw with him is one of the probably the best single season turnarounds in 3-point shooting form from a player. He went from a 22% 3-point shooter to a 43% 3-point shooter. That is an astonishing turnaround. He did it on three times the amount of attempts per game as well, which is also ridiculously good. He averaged 18-4 in 32 minutes. Do you think that those 32 minutes that he played as a member of the Suns is something that he will replicate this season?
I do, yeah. That's what Bojan Bogdanović played last year for the Pacers as their starting wing. And he had to have a little bit of bump in minutes just because of Oladipo's injury at the end of the year. But considering that's what Warren played last year and the guy he's replacing played last year, around that seems like it'll be the minutes he's given this season.
Now, he put up a 22% usage rate. I do see that dropping a little bit for Warren, just given the other players around, especially when Oladipo ends up returning. And he does struggle in other areas. He's a pretty poor rebounder, doesn't get much in terms of assists or blocks. He did up his steal rate last year and has always been efficient from the field. So I think he's okay as a later round player. In fact, last year he was the 62nd ranked player on a per game basis. I don't see him getting to that level because I just don't see that 3-point shooting sticking at the 43% that it was at last year. I think that there's it's a little bit anomalous to do that over a 43-game sample size, which he did last year. But I think he still can be solid and probably won't lose that much when Oladipo returns. Or do you see him losing quite a bit in terms of Victor returning?
No, I'm with you. I think he'll still be the starter and play about the same minutes unless someone really pops in the time Oladipo's out. But I don't see that happening.
Let's talk about who is the best fantasy player on this team, and that is, of course, Miles Turner, who took a big leap forward last season. Turner averaged 2.7 blocks per game, 13 points and 7 rebounds, but still just 29 minutes per game, 49% from the field, which is okay, but not great from a center, and he saw his free throw percentage dip. So despite the fact that his ranking jumped from 65th to 33rd, there were still some areas that were a little bit disappointing. Now, I actually see his minutes going up this season, given the way or what's happened to the front court. Do you see him playing more than those 28, 29 minutes he played last season?
Yeah, I think he can get up to, the Pacers don't typically play their starters more than 32 minutes, but in that 30 to 32 range seems like where Turner could get because, like you said, their front court got shaken up. Sabonis is going to start at the four now, so they can't play him as much at the backup five. And the guy they drafted to play backup center, Goga Bitadze, is a rookie, and who knows how effective he'll be, how many minutes he'll get. So I think it's definitely fair to say Turner's minutes could get a small bump.
Yeah, I think they're going to push up to 30, 31, that sort of a mark, which is going to keep him in that third round range. For drafts this season, he's got ranked 21 on Yahoo, which seems high. He's ranked 61 on ESPN, which is definitely low. The block numbers, that's really what's driving his value. And if that falls from the 2.7 he averaged per game last season, which was a significant increase from where he was the year before, it was a 50% increase in his per 36-minute block rate, which is a huge jump. And if that falls off, then we are looking at a guy that could end up hurting you in terms of value there. So it is something to be aware of when someone's value is really driven by one category that took a massive leap forward the year before, which is what happened with Oladipo in that previous season. There is always a level of caution I think you have to have in that, because if it falls off 10%, 20%, then it does lose quite a bit of value. And I think that that's a risk from Turner. But was there anything different that you saw that enabled him to block so many more shots last season?
Not really, just mostly, doing yoga in the summer and, improving his body and more reps playing the game the season before, just basically getting stronger and better at the game. So it wasn't really anything schematically that the team did that vaulted that number.
Let's talk about a change in scheme that is going to occur this season. Thaddeus Young is out. He is in Chicago. Domantas Sabonis, who was the backup center last season, he looks like he is going to start, whether it's at the four or the five, however you want to designate him and Miles Turner. They'll probably have different roles offensively and defensively. I'm pretty concerned about how this pairing is going to work in terms of Sabonis, if he has to guard on the perimeter, what that does in terms of how he functioned in that second unit as a relatively high usage guy. I just think adding him to the starting unit maybe actually decreases that usage. How do you see this fit with him alongside Turner? How did they look together last season in the minutes they played?
Practically and anecdotally, it seems like it should work, right? Like Sabonis can be your bruising center who can roll to the rim, and Turner can be your guy on the perimeter who can shoot the outside shot. And then on defense, they just kind of flip where Turner guards the basket. But like you said, Sabonis really struggles away from the basket on defense, and Turner does to a lesser extent. And then on offense, Kalen Cooper, one of the better pacer riders, has been pushing this, but they just kind of lack spatial awareness around each other, and it causes the offense to not work as well when they share the floor together. So far, the experiment hasn't been as good, but they have both conceded that they think with more minutes, they think it can work better just from a rhythm standpoint, from getting more reps standpoint. So, there's belief amongst the Pacers conglomerate and fandom that, it can work and it can be something that in real life is effective as they zig while their team zag. But in a perspective of, Sabonis' usage, it'll probably drop as he plays with the starters, and his effectiveness will probably drop as he plays with someone he's a worse fit with.
Yeah, that's sort of how I see it as well. He's never going to be putting up big defensive numbers as well, and playing alongside, especially when Oladipo comes back, guys like him and Warren and Brogdon and Turner, who are all going to need to get their shots, versus playing alongside Doug McDermott in a bench unit as he was last year, is going to have an impact. But yeah, he could play an extra 5 minutes a game, which might offset that. I think that some of the sites have bumped him up way too high, ESPN at 36. That's just basically assuming that all of his numbers last season are just going to continue continue on the same rate with increased minutes, and I don't think that's going to be the case. He also took, like I talked about Turner, taking that huge step forward with his block rate. His field goal percentage, Sabonis, went from 51 up to 59. That is a huge leap, and it did make up the biggest portion of his overall fantasy value. And if that falls back down to 55%, from 59, then that does impact what he's able to do as well. And he also saw his free throws weirdly drop off significantly, down to 64% over the final 34 games of last season. Do we think Sabonis is going to bring back the three ball at all? He shot it a little bit in his first season in Oklahoma City, and then he's had about 10 attempts, it feels like, through his Indiana Pacers career.
I kind of doubt it. They don't really ask him to do it, and all the attempts he had last year when he was, so wide open that you or I would have considered shooting it if we were on the floor in the NBA. So, no, I don't think his attempts will rise, especially because if he's on the floor with Turner and they're running a play for a big to shoot a three, it's not going to be Sabonis anyway. So, I don't think his attempts will rise at all if they even do.
Yeah, I don't think they will rise either. He will he shot 50% plus from three last year, but it was on 17 attempts, so really not making a difference. Now, the big free agent acquisition for this team is Malcolm Brogdon. They brought him across from the Milwaukee Bucks. Hasn't really been playing point guard for the Bucks since his rookie season, but now he is slated to be the starting point guard after Corey Joseph left, Darren Collison abruptly retired, and Tyreke Evans has been suspended. So Brogdon, we saw limited assist numbers, 3.2 each of the last two seasons, but that first year in Milwaukee, he averaged over four a game in 26 minutes. So I think we see him get a rise back in his assist rate. I think he's going to score pretty solidly. I think he's solid enough as a potential top 60 player for this upcoming season. But is there concern with Brogdon not having really ever been a full-time point guard, especially over the last 2 years, that he's going to be running things? Or do you think that when Oladipo's back, he'll have more of that primary creation role?
I think when Oladipo's back, Brogdon will be the quote-unquote point guard, but really he's just, they're just playing guard and guard, and whoever has the ball will handle it. And Victor will most likely have it more often in those instances. And even when Oladipo's not playing, Brogdon will bring it up the floor, but, they're going to call on Lamb and Warren for more creation, and the pick and roll and the pick and pop with Turner and Sabonis is good, but, Brogdon's going to have to set those guys up. I think with an increased usage, because only 21% last year, that number's surely going to go up now that his role is going to increase. Will definitely allow him to have more options to set up teammates and get more shots, but it's going to be interesting to see how that works. I think he might operate a little bit more off guard than the typical point guard.
Okay, so you do think that usage will increase, because it was pretty low, and it enabled him to maintain a ridiculously high true shooting of 62%, which was at 65 over the final month of the season, a ludicrous number there, as he shot 51, 43, and 93. I would imagine that those numbers, maybe not the free throws, but those other numbers come down.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think he'll just be asked to create a little bit more for himself, which will just automatically knock down his percentages somewhat. But I think you're right. The free throws can stay the same. I mean, he's been good at those his whole career, and I think the volume will go up by more than the percentages will go down, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can say that. I think the true shooting numbers will dip, but the usage will increase. And that should offset. And he was the 77th ranked player last year. He should be getting more minutes this season, so more usage, more assists, and he should be able to beat that number pretty easily and be a solid enough mid-round guy, especially for those roto leagues when you're looking for guys who aren't going to hurt you in percentages. Brogdon is obviously not going to hurt you there. In fact, he's likely to help with that elite free throw percentage that he does offer. Now, Brogdon suffered some pretty significant injuries last season, came back for the playoffs. If he is out, the Pacers are going to have to rely upon Aaron Holiday as their backup point guard. Holiday surprised me last season. Do you think that if he is forced into a large, or first of all, do you think that A, he is the primary backup, and could he handle a larger role if a Brogdon injury occurred?
Yeah, the front office is really high on him, so I imagine he starts the season as the backup point guard, but they didn't sign TJ McConnell for nothing. I think they know that he's young and he's a point guard, and young point guards tend to be ineffective. I think that McConnell's nice insurance for that. So there is some risk there with Holiday's minutes of, okay, if he starts off pretty bad, he might literally play not at all or less. But they do have a lot of confidence in him for a reason, and that's like you said, he was pretty inconsistent, but he was impressive in bursts in his rookie year and had a handful of really good games. So I think that he's the right choice to start the season as the backup, and he could do some damage with just a tiny bit more consistency.
he's over. When you look at his 3-point numbers at UCLA, they were good. They were 40% 3-point shooter. And last year, you look at it, under 34%, you go, that's not very good. But he also shot 41% over the final 26 games of last season. So just started out really poorly and started to finish along the lines of the shooter that we think that he can become. So that's interesting to watch. It's especially interesting for deeper leagues, a guy that can have 19 minutes, 20 minutes a night, perhaps. You have those games where he has to step up even more if Brogdon goes down at all. There is value in a guy like that who can come in, provide some assists, and hit some threes. So he's going to be a name to watch, especially in those deeper leagues, especially if you're looking at best ball formats when you just got a guy that if he gets elevated, you feel pretty confident that he's going to be able to produce. And Holiday is that guy to me. They're playing alongside his brother in that second unit. We've mentioned Goga Badadze already. I really like Goga. It's not the greatest fit in terms of the players who are ahead of him there, but I think at that point in the draft, he's fallen so far that you have to grab him. The Pacers, I think, feel the same. I'm pretty sure Pritchard has said something like that in the media, that when we see a player of Badadze's status, we just go and grab him and we figure it out later. And that's how things work in the NBA. Do you think that he will be in there as the backup center straight away?
Yeah, I do. Pritchard said in other press conferences that, of course they do the thing where they talk up the European play. But, I mean, it is the second best league in the world, and he was good in it. And that should translate pretty well. The skills he have tend to be ones that show that he has a high feel for the game, good shot blocker, good pick and roll player. He just understands what's going on around him. And then Kevin Pritchard himself has said that he's probably ready to play in the rotation this season. And with Sabonis moving to the starting lineup, I don't think that prevents Sabonis from getting some minutes at backup center, but he'd be playing a ton of minutes if he's starting and being the backup five. And I don't think that Sabonis, given his foul trouble and just overall play style, is ready for it more than maybe 30 minutes. So I think Goga could get like 10 to 12 minutes a night as the backup center.
And it's not like the backup power forward situation is all that strong either on this team to come in and help play alongside Sabonis. So that is going to, I think, when you look at those guys who could be the backup power forward, they're going to play Doug McDermott there. There's TJ Leaf. Is it Jakar Sampson who they brought in? Not exactly the strongest group of guys. So, but Badadze looks to me to be that first big off the bench. I've got to struggle to have much of a standard league impact, but deeper leagues, and everyone who listens to this podcast knows that I really like him for dynasty leagues. I've got him as a top 10 guy, and I think he could very easily finish as the third best player out of this entire draft class. He blocks shots, he can hit threes, he can rebound, he can score, he can shoot well. Defensively, there are some issues, but I think he can sort those out. I'm not all that worried about that, and I think he can be a solid starter really, really quickly. And of course, with Domantas Sabonis and restricted free agency coming up, who knows the direction the Pacers look to go there. Rosters change all the time in the NBA, so Badadze could be on this team, Turner could be on a different team, Badadze could be on a different team. Who knows how things look in the next 2 to 3 seasons, but he is really interesting to see get out there and at least show some stuff, because we didn't get to see him, unfortunately, in Summer League this year. What about TJ McConnell? We talked about him already. It was a curious signing for me. I don't know if they were just trying to collect the set of TJs. They have all three of those in the NBA at the moment, TJ Leaf, TJ McConnell, and TJ Warren. That seems to be the only real reason that they would go for him. I know you mentioned that Aaron Holiday's a second-year guy, but is McConnell... I don't see him as a guy that's playing every night.
No, I don't either. It might depend. And like with Oladipo out, maybe there's a way that if Brogdon plays off guard and Holiday's gassed or having an off night, they play McConnell. Like last year, after Oladipo got hurt and Edmund Sumner was playing a little bit, Nate McMillan said that they would try to, between Sumner and Holiday, just decide who is better for the matchup and play one of those guys. So maybe that's what happens with McConnell, but I'm with you that he's definitely not going to play every game, especially if Holiday plays how they expect him to. I think it's just mostly insurance at point guard, given that, we haven't seen Holiday be a consistent contributor. And as you said earlier, Brogdon's had some injuries in the past.
Do you think Doug McDermott will primarily be playing as a four this year?
I think at the start of the season, he'll be the backup three and TJ Leaf will be the backup four. But I think those two guys are competing for the last spot in the rotation when Oladipo does return.
Yeah, that's the way I see it as well. McDermott, we know he's an excellent shooter. We also know he provides nothing else in no other categories at all. He hits threes and that's literally all he does. TJ Leaf has had a bit of a weird career so far in terms of fluctuating shooting percentages. I believe he shot something crazy as a rookie from three, and then that dropped way down to about 30% last year. I'm just bringing up his number, so it's really hard to get a read on him. What's your take on McDermott? Is is he someone who is key to what this team is doing in terms of being that backup shooter and helping space the floor? Or is the way that the rotation shuffled making him a little bit more superfluous this year?
I think his shooting's kind of important with the second unit. I mean, they have no other shooters unless Goga really pops, and he could as a shooter. But with that group, like Holidays, both Holidays are below average last year at least. And Leaf, like you just said, is pretty inconsistent. He shot well in college, but last year with a bunch of muscle, his shot was flatter and not as effective. So maybe they need his shooting with the second and starting unit. I mean, if Warren's three ball, like you said, drops, then outside of Brogdon, they don't really have anybody who is a good movement shooter. So they might need it. But like you said, he doesn't offer much else, and they didn't really feed him the ball much at all. I believe he had a career low usage, including his rookie year, career low usage this past season. He doesn't super well fit with the way they kind of play, and teams really cut him off knowing that he's the first option right away on possessions as he flies around the perimeter. So there's a chance that he's the guy who ends up being the odd man out of the rotation, but they do try to hunt the shots for him, and they do need his shooting with some groups.
That's really all he provides is three, so he can be a streaming option for three-pointers, and that's really about it. The last guy I do want to touch on here is Edmund Sumner. You referenced him. I thought he looked all right last season after missing most of his rookie year with a knee injury, but it doesn't appear, again, bringing McConnell in, that they have all that much confidence in Sumner being able to handle that third guard role. Did you like what you saw from him last season in the, surprise opportunities that he was given?
I'm a pretty big Sumner fan. I was glad he got the start. He did a great job on defense against Klay Thompson in his first ever NBA start. They threw him right into the fire against the Warriors. Unfortunately, doing well against Klay Thompson is not a fantasy stat. And unfortunately, he didn't pop enough in his 23 games to really earn a rotation spot. Now, he's probably, the first, let me phrase that, he's definitely the first wing guard out of the rotation. I think McConnell would play before him in the case of an injury. But, if Justin Holiday starts the season off struggling, I don't think they'd be hesitant to turn to Sumner. I mean, they just gave him an extension this summer. He showed that he can do some stuff, and he knocked down the three really well in the G League last year. It didn't really translate to the NBA, but, I think that he's a better three-point shooter than his percentages say. I think he has a chance to end up cracking the end of the rotation, but he's got an uphill climb ahead of him.
He put up some interesting defensive numbers during that during those starts. He had two blocks and two steals in that first start against the Warriors as well. So he's sort of a name to watch, but coming from a long way back to have really any sort of an impact. Tony, that'll wrap it up for looking at these Pacers guys. Just go through my value and bust guy. The value guy, I think, is Brogdon at 89 on ESPN. They're real value there. TJ Warren at 96 on Yahoo, I also think is a little bit too high. I have my concerns, as I mentioned, with that shooting perhaps falling off from TJ. Tony, thank you for jumping on to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast to talk about the Pacers. Let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter, and give Locked On Pacers a plug.
Of course, Josh. Thank you for having me. My Twitter is at TEastNBA. You can follow me for all things Pacers and occasionally my thoughts on other stuff around the NBA. And of course, check out Locked On Pacers. Me and my co-host Adam Friedman cover everything you need to know about the team. Even in the offseason, we're finding stuff to talk about with all the international basketball going on.
So go check out Tony and Adam over on Locked On Pacers. Tony, thanks for jumping on with me.
Yeah, Josh, appreciate it as always.